Uno, dos, tres, go!
Vole, vole! Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 30 of Good, Bad, and Wretched. My name is Chris. With me, chugging the beer down, is Josh.
This is a good one.
What is it?
It's a ginger one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I didn't like the ginger with the orange peel in it as much.
No, this is the straight up.
Straight up. Anyway, yeah. Welcome back to a regular topic episode here after our last interview with Craig Davidson. Hope
that
you guys
feels so long ago.
I know. Hope you guys enjoyed that. We had a fun time recording that.
I've really missed you over the last 2 weeks.
You want a hug?
No, but I did. It feels like so long.
No, if I had the ability in me to cry, I would do it right now.
I hope we can do another one next week, maybe.
We'll see. But anyway, welcome to episode 30. Today we're going to be talking about killer kids.
No, we're talking about like creepy psycho
I'm talking about
kids.
Killer kids, just because okay, you we,
this wasn't clarified before, so it might go a little bit into creepy.
Okay, whatever works.
As opposed to actual murder.
Whatever works. But let's talk about what we've watched.
Okay.
Because we haven't for a while.
I've got lots.
So why don't you start?
Should I go through everything?
Well, be reasonable.
Some are just kind of skims.
Yeah, okay. Well, be reasonable.
Yeah, and if people don't like this, let us know. But yeah. I think people do. So.
Okay, well, bring it.
Okay, so first let's talk about New Nightmare.
Finished.
What?
You're finished.
Well, I've got the remake.
Oh, well.
Do you have the remake? Do you own it?
No, but you're finished.
What do you mean?
You're finished.
The series.
Don't fucking bother with that remake.
Well, I just kind of feel like I need to watch it again.
It's horrible.
Oh, I know it's horrible, but...
Okay, well, anyway, what about New Nightmare? Tell me.
Okay, so New Nightmare is technically the last in the original series.
Yep.
Directed by Wes Craven, so returning Wes Craven from the original.
I wonder how they got him, they convinced him to come back and do that.
Well, I was reading about it, and
after all those shitty sequels...
So apparently this was the idea he originally pitched for Dream Warriors that they rejected. So it sounds like he finally got his way. He wanted to make Freddy darker and less comic. And apparently he watched all the sequels and felt like they didn't do justice to the series at all. So he wanted to sort of take it back to its roots. I thought he did a great job. I mean, this is definitely has some flaws, but I thought it was pretty cool. And so he brought back Heather Langenkamp and John Saxon, and Robert Englund, of course, and they were playing themselves.
Yeah, and he plays himself in the movie as well.
Yeah, and the movie's pretty much about them making the movie. So it's that word I don't like to use, so I'm not going to use it.
Starts with an M.
Yeah, to start with an M. But I mean, this is kind of the first movie that kind of did this. This was before Scream.
Breaking that fourth wall.
Yeah, and, and sort of showing us kind of a movie within a movie scenario. And, yeah, it was really cool. I really liked seeing Wes on screen. I mean, especially, I liked it at the time, too, but especially now it just seems to mean a lot more. And, yeah, I really liked the idea behind this. I did like Freddy. I did like how they stripped him down and he wasn't so jokey, except at the end when his tongue got super big. So I felt like I was watching Soul Vengeance or something, except with a tongue. If you don't know about, have you seen Soul Vengeance?
No.
It's where a guy strangles people with his cock.
Really? Can I see this Soul
it's
Vengeance?
As long then? As Freddy's tongue in this movie, it's pretty hilarious.
I want to see it.
It's not that good. It's
oh,
come
on. it's kind of like Killer
guy,
Tongue.
What? I think it's the guy who did the Penitentiary movies.
Oh, really? It reminds me of Killer Tongue too, with that Mindy.
Yeah, I haven't seen
Clark.
That one yet. Yeah,
but yeah, I haven't seen New Nightmare in a long time. For some reason, that's the one I've seen the least out of the entire series. I think because I've always been like expecting jokey Freddy,
right?
And then going back to that serious Freddy, I've always been kind of hesitant to revisit it because I'm like, I like the idea of the movie. I like the fact Wes Craven came back and did the movie, but I'm kind of like, I'm not sure if I'm sold on it because the first time I saw it, I wasn't sold on it.
Sold?
That's not what I meant. I like the only things I really remember about it was like the whole scene with where Wes Craven makes fun of Freddy becoming this pop culture icon by having him show up on a talk show.
Right.
And he like comes out and he's like, Robert Englund comes out as Freddy and everyone's going crazy over him when the guy in the movies is like a friggin' child molesting killer.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
And I remember Langenkamp has a son in it who kind of like has this connection with Freddy.
Yeah, it's,
and there's
speaking of creepy kids.
And there's a scene when he goes up on the top of like a jungle gym or something and he like raises his arms to the sky.
Yeah, it's like this rocket.
And then he says something like, God doesn't want me.
Something like that,
along those lines, which I thought was really cool, like creepy cool.
Yeah.
But that's really all I remember. I haven't seen New Nightmare in a while.
Yeah, that I thought the kid was really creepy, actually, because he does some kind of, like, possession stuff. It's actually that kid from Pet Sematary.
Which is coming up later.
Yeah. But, no, I thought it was really good. I mean, looking at the series as a whole, this is probably tied for my second favorite. I think part four might slightly edge this out, maybe. I don't know. I think it would depend on my mood.
So much like Alien series, let's rank these. Let's do the Josh Rankathon.
This is hard.
So, first is...
The original, of course.
But let's break it down for me.
Okay, second and third, depending on my mood, would be part four, The Dream Master, and New Nightmare.
Okay.
The next one,
now it gets harder?
Probably be part two, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Then, probably...
If you fucking put Freddy's Dead above Dream Warriors... We might not be recording ever again.
I don't know, man. Oh, Dream Warriors. Sorry, I forgot about Dream Warriors. Okay, no, Dream Warriors goes before two. So we're going original, and then 4/A New Nightmare.
Yeah.
Then Dream Warriors.
Three.
Then I'd probably go with Freddy's Dead.
Freddy's Dead.
And then
six.
Dream Child.
Where's two? After three?
Oh, shit. Yeah, two would be after three.
So you're saying Freddy's Dead is the worst one?
I'd say, I think those last two, again, depending on my mood.
Okay.
They're really, like, I think if you're in the right mood for some of these, they might feel a little better.
So in
like, if I was in the right mood for Dream Warriors, it might seem better than it actually is.
Are we still in the mindset that this is the least of the three big slasher series then?
Yeah, I gotta say, this was definitely I felt like this was the biggest slog to get through.
Okay, fair enough.
Except New Nightmare was much better than Halloween 8, of course.
Well, that doesn't take much.
No, but I
mean... Trick or treat, motherfucker!
But I thought this started and ended on a pretty good note, as opposed to Halloween, which sort of just kept getting worse. So, for the most part...
That's not particularly true.
Which one?
H2O was pretty good.
Yeah, we differ on that one.
Yeah.
I didn't like H2O.
And now that I just picked up the producer's cut of 6...
Yeah.
We'll see how that works out for me.
That's true. Yeah, I know. So. You know, I don't really have the patience for producer's cuts that you do, but...
Well.
But, it was, no, and I know that sometimes I don't agree with the masses, and that's fine, right?
Most times you don't agree with the masses.
Well, no, sometimes I do. I mean, everyone agrees that the first one's the best one, right? Well, I mean, but that's kind of a given, but,
I'm sure there are some people out there you would find who don't agree that the first one's the best one. I'm sure there's going to be those people that say Dream Warriors is the best one.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Dream Warriors as a sequel, but compared to the first one, no contest.
I did find when, like, kind of just, you know, sort of, you know, after I watch movies, I kind of look at other reviews and stuff, and I did find Nightmare to be the most heated debates. Like, it wasn't as, you know, like Friday the 13th, it's kind of like 1, 4, and 6 are kind of the favorites, right?
Yep.
And there's this, it's kind of like not really questioned that much.
Although people would question me because in the Friday 13th series, Jason Lives is my favorite. Over 1. So.
That's 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, those three are still like kind of the, but in Nightmare, it's kind of like everyone kind of agrees with the first one. But then, like, the other ones, it's like a lot of people really like 2. A lot of people really like Dream Warriors. A lot of people like Dream Master. And then there's some love for Dream Child.
I wonder if 2 is an ironic love now that all that stuff has come out about being homosexual.
Maybe. I'd say 2 was probably one of the more memorable ones from my youth. Like, it's one of the ones I remembered the most.
Dream Warriors for me, which is probably why I like it the best.
Anyway, it is an interesting series that way. But as far as like, yeah, I definitely would go back to the Friday movies before these or Halloween for sure.
I would probably go back to the Friday over the three series too, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because they're the most fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. So New Nightmare, I'd give this a recommend.
What's the next series? You decided yet?
I'm kind of leaning towards one, but I think it'll be water-based.
Is it the one we were talking about earlier?
Maybe. It'll be water-based, whichever it is, I'm pretty sure.
So get ready for Josh's next slog through his franchise.
Yes. Speaking of slogs.
Oh, no. Another Asylum title?
No. So the other day, Chris sent me a message telling me that a certain movie was on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And so I was really excited. And I've been really excited about this movie for about a year. And this movie is called Harbinger Down.
Yep.
And this was directed by Alec Gillis and written by him as well. And produced by Gillis, I believe Gillis, and Tom Woodruff. And these are the guys, these are a pair of effects artists that used to work for Stan Winston. Yep. They worked on a bunch of the Aliens movies, Pumpkinhead.
Yep.
And I believe they took over Stan Winston's studio after he passed away. I'm not 100% sure on that, but they're, you know, these are really well-known, you know, kind of go-to effects guys, practical effects guys. And the story is that they worked on the Thing remake, and apparently all of their effects got cut and replaced with CG. So in response to that, they said, well, screw this. We're going to go make our own movie called Harbinger Down, and it's going to be all practical effects. So, of course, being an effects nerd that I am, I was super stoked about this. And, I've been looking forward to this a long time. There was a Kickstarter campaign, and I had really high hopes, and Lance Henriksen was announced to be the star. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be amazing. You know, great effects artists, practical effects, Lance Henriksen, set in a underwater or set on a sort of abandoned, not abandoned, but a crabbing ship. So like a isolated location.
I just want to jut in for a minute about you saying that Lance Henriksen means it's quality. Have you not seen The Mangler 2?
No, I know, but he still brings that kind of old school, like
I feel like a lot of times he's just casted to get that cred out there, to get the name on the box.
I agree with that, but I thought him combined with these guys, it would be a good, because he is a good actor.
True
right?
enough.
I didn't feel like he was phoning it in on this one. I thought he did a really good job. Okay. But holy crap! Overall,
so it's a crabbing boat, and what happens?
Well, they find this. They pull up this like piece of ice, and inside there's this astronaut guy, this Russian astronaut, and then they break it open, and then it starts turning into it turns into something like the Thing or Aliens, there's a, you know, a monster is let loose on the boat, and they're trying to survive.
So try not to spoil this for me, because I do want to see it.
Yeah.
But you said you didn't really care for it, or what's the deal?
I just don't understand what the problem was, because again, like, it's all set up like it should have been really good, right? And this is Gillis's directorial debut. He hasn't directed a movie before, and I think that might be the problem. Like, I just felt like the script was, something was weird about it. Like, I just. Everything felt really acty, like everyone was acting, and there wasn't really any personalities coming out. It just felt really staged.
So it didn't feel organic enough.
No, not at all.
Okay.
And then the effects, like I was expecting these amazing effects, and they were just kind of ho-hum.
Huh.
Like the whole thing was just kind of like, really, like what happened? Like,
and it was short too, right? It was only like 80 minutes.
Yeah. And I was just not engaged at all. Hmm. And I did watch it while I was a little tired, but still, like, I went back and checked it out again just to make sure I was, you know, was I dozing off? Like, what, did I miss something? Nope. It just wasn't a very good movie.
Huh.
And then they throw in this, like, Russian character, this woman, and she's, like, a typical, like, you know, evil Russian with the, like, Rocky IV accent. And
I will break you.
Yeah, and it just, I don't know, like, just everything about it just felt really... Yeah, like unnatural, and I just didn't care. I didn't care at all. And then on top of that, the effects weren't very good. And then there was like not really much gore, and you know, just everything about it. I was just, and it, at times it almost felt like CG. And I know they were like promoting this as no CG. Everything was practical, makeup effects, CG miniatures. Assisted? I don't know. Hmm. Anyway, I definitely wouldn't recommend this. I'm so happy it was on Netflix and I didn't buy it. And I feel really bad because, I mean, you know, I do like these guys. I mean, I met Tom Woodruff a few weeks ago at an event here in Vancouver. And, you know, I was so excited for this. The guy's a super nice guy. And, like, I really want them to succeed. But they're the same guys behind the Alien versus Predator movies, too. So I don't know. I just think it was just a lack of storytelling.
Requiem.
Maybe they should, maybe in the hands of someone else, like, this could have been really good. I mean, like, Carpenter's the master of, like, isolation horror, right? So maybe had it been in Carpenter's hands, might have been a different story. But I just didn't feel like they capitalized on the isolation thing. And there was too much, like, forced comedy. And I hated the lead actress. Yeah. So it was just, I didn't take her seriously as a scientist at all. Like, oh, this was,
so it's like Tara Reid in any movie she plays a scientist, like Alone in the Dark.
Yeah, like Tara Reid or like Denise Richards in the Bond movie. Like, I just didn't buy it, right? So, yeah, too bad. Henriksen was good, but everyone else wasn't.
I'm still going to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's short enough to check out. And like, if you're a fan of creature features, you might get something out of it. But I feel like you'll probably agree with me. But well, then again, we don't agree quite often.
We'll see. When I watch it, then maybe I'll come back to you and say that you're full of shit. But we'll see.
True.
We'll see.
I'm sure you will.
I'll do it. I'll do it just to spite you.
Yeah.
I'll be like, the Harbinger Down was awesome, dude. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of Harbinger Down is awesome.
Okay, well.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so then next, I went to the theater and I went and saw Crimson Peak.
Yep. Which I didn't go see. Let me tell you a story about Crimson Peak before you started. I want to see this movie. You know, it's Del Toro. Looks like it's more along the lines of Kronos or the stuff he made in Mexico where it's got that style to it and it's gothic-y and everything. So opening weekend, I'm like, I want to go see this. I'm excited to go see this. The reason this movie flopped, and I'm sure of this, is because they did not play it in regular theaters. Most theaters were only playing it in IMAX or only playing it in like some of those other fancy things. If I want to go see a movie, I want to see a fucking movie. I don't want to pay extra to see, like, have my seat ricochet all over the theater.
Right.
I don't want to pay for IMAX. I don't care about IMAX. Like, yeah. I'm not paying the extra $6 to go see IMAX. So I didn't have that option opening weekend of any theater around me to go see it in regular showings.
That's true. I had to go see it in that Ultra AVX.
Yeah.
In 3D, though.
I don't want to see Ultra AVX either. It's like,
yeah,
it's like you're limiting your audience by doing that. And I think that's partially the reason it might not have done as well as it could have.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that, but yeah, maybe.
It's bullshit. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, you didn't miss much. I mean, like,
well, I've heard it's a gothic romance, not really a horror movie.
It's a gothic romance. I mean, performance-wise, like, acting, very good, except for Charlie Hunnam.
Well, because he doesn't have his shirt off for the whole fucking movie.
Oh, my God.
The women can't post pictures of him to their Facebook.
I really want to like him, you know, and like,
He's a douche.
I'm a Sons of Anarchy fan, but he takes me out of that show constantly because he always feels like he's acting. Like,
I don't know if he has a social media manager or if it's actually him, but anytime I see people reposting shit from his Facebook or his Twitter, it's douchey because it's just pictures of him with his shirt off and everything.
Oh, weird.
Being like, hey, ladies. Now, I don't know if that's a publicist or if that's actually him.
Right.
I'm hoping it's not actually him, because if it is him, he's biggest fucking douche in the world.
Well, the only good thing I can say in his defense is at least he pulled out of that 50 Shades of Grey movie.
That's true.
Right. And that was pretty cool of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is in Sons of Anarchy, but like I said, he does take me out of that show, and he took me out of this movie.
Okay.
But the rest of the cast, Mia Wasikowska and Tom Hiddleston and Jessica Chastain. She was awesome in this, as was Hiddleston. So acting-wise, fantastic. Visually, awesome. Loved it. Loved it, like, watching the movie. And I'm really glad I saw it in the theater. But, again, story-wise, I felt just like the engaging script was just kind of, it was, I felt like it was really dumbed down. Like, and I don't know if that was studio meddling, but there were just things where it was like, if they had just let me think a little more, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But everything was really spelled out for me. And
I find that weird.
I felt handheld through it.
I find that weird because his other movies that are similar vein, like I said, Kronos and Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth and stuff.
Yeah.
The ones that I feel are the most in tune with Crimson Peak didn't do that. They didn't dumb down the story for people.
Because they were made in Mexico.
I guess so.
And without, you know, I don't know how much control. Like, Del Toro seems to have had a problem with studio control in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he pulled out of the, I think he was doing, like, Shadows of Innsmouth movie or something. Like, yeah. He was doing some big Lovecraft thing, and he pulled out of that. And wasn't he involved with The Hobbit, I think, at some point? And he pulled out of that, and... So he definitely doesn't like that stuff, but
he just needs to go back to Mexico and make another movie.
Yeah, this was don't get me wrong, this was a great movie to look at, and there's a lot of love for this movie. I just felt the script was a little dumb, but other than that, I thought it looked great, and I did enjoy it. I just Charlie Hunnam.
You're actually not alone on that. I've been hearing that from a lot of people saying
about
that it
Charlie
was,
Hunnam, or
no, just about the movie in general. That it's a visual treat,
yeah,
but it just isn't very good plot wise.
Yeah, and there's something that happens literally in the first minute. And I'm not going to tell you what it is.
No, don't tell me, because I am going to watch it.
They say something in the first minute that tells you how to watch the movie.
Really?
And that really bothered me. That's... Like, I'm like, why did you tell me that? Why didn't you let me figure that out on my own?
Weird.
But nope, they tell you right away. And it's just, it just got me in a different mindset right away. And again, it's good. It's a good theatrical movie experience, but just, just be expected to be dumbed down by the script. Okay. So I've got a few more here. I can kind of whip through the rest of these. So I got a few more Dollarama favorites.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Those Dollarama hits just keep on coming.
So I've got one called Fallen Angels. This is an older movie.
It's a Canadian movie.
Is it Canadian?
Probably.
It's from 2002. It stars Michael Ironside and Jeff Fahey.
Yeah, it's Canadian.
Yeah. And I thought this was going to suck, but it's actually not bad. It's about these... this accident happens at this girls' school where a bunch of girls burn to death because Jeff Fahey's a teacher that's going around raping them, or kind of like sexually coming on to these girls, and then something happens where one of the girls is trying to get away from him and ends up setting the school on fire, and all these girls die. Anyway, this tabloid reporter tries to make a story of this like years later and brings all the girls back to this school to like make a documentary and to sort of relive the events of the past. And anyway, one thing leads to another, and there's a killer on the loose. And I thought this was going to be terrible. I actually quite enjoyed it. I mean, this is I got this for $2. I was expecting to be selling it, and I actually might hold on to this one. I thought it was pretty effective, but you got to remember Ironside and Fahey were this was like in the early 2000s, so they were kind of doing well at that time. I'm surprised this director got them for
this
movie.
Who's the director?
The director is Ian David Diaz.
Okay.
He hasn't really done anything else. But this was all right. It also had Emily Booth. She's a British actress and kind of a hottie, and she was in, I think she was in Razorblade Smile and some movies like that. But
well, Ironside.
Yeah.
That's the main thing you need to know about.
Ironside was good, and Fahey was really good in this as well. So... yeah, I checked that one out if you see that one kicking around for $2.
Finally, a Dollarama one that didn't suck.
Yeah. So the next one is called Hit and Run.
Oh, God, this sucks.
Now, this has Kevin Corrigan in it.
I remember you asking me if I'd seen it, and I told you, is it this one? And when you said it was, I was like, yeah, that sucks.
So this is from 2009. This has got Kevin Corrigan in it, and he's an indie actor, and you'll recognize the guy if you see him. But I really like him, so I was looking forward to seeing this. And this is a weird one, because what it is it's a girl that is on her, she's driving home and she's intoxicated, and somehow she runs over this dude, Kevin Corrigan, and he ends up stuck to her grill.
Thanks for the ride, lady.
It's kind of like Thanks for the Ride, Lady.
Well, it's also not like Stuck by Stuart Gordon.
Yeah. So she drives home and he's hanging off her grill somehow. I still don't know how that worked. And she freaks out when she sees him there and ends up killing him with a golf club and then goes and buries him. And I thought it was actually really effective. Like the first half of this movie, or first half hour, I guess, when this all goes down and she's like kind of dealing with what she's done and the guilt, and her boyfriend comes over, and I thought it was extremely well acted and really effective. Like, how is she going to get out of this? Like, are the cops going to, you know, because there's starting to be news reports and stuff. I thought it was awesome up until then. Then it just turns stupid, like completely fucking stupid. And I don't even know what the hell happened. And I don't even know what this was about. And I don't even know what the fuck was up with Kevin Corrigan. Like, was he a zombie? Was he like her conscience? Like, I don't know. Was he a killer? Like, man. Anyway, absolutely stupid. Hated it.
Sucks. So told you.
Now, on the positive side, there was some really cool camera angles. Like, there were times when, because Kevin Corrigan, like crazy Kevin Corrigan, ties her to the like grill of the car and starts driving around, and it's like a POV shot of her like sideways on the grill driving fast and stuff. So stuff like that was kind of cool, but yeah.
Well, it's kind of like that Nimrod Antel guy did with Vacancy, right? Not a good movie, but he did all these weird camera angles that were kind of cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but it sounds similar. Like,
yeah,
stylistically, this guy made some good choices, but or girl, Enda? I don't know if Enda's a guy or girl.
I have no idea.
But anyway, too bad, because like it really had me for the first half hour, and then it just shit the bed. Next, another
Dollarama
Plasterhead.
Oh, Plasterhead's terrible.
Oh,
dude.
My god, man. So this is a movie.
I saw this back when I was still getting movies in the mail from like zip.ca.
Oh, really?
Which was Canada's version of Netflix.
So this is about
it's terrible.
This is about an urban legend about this guy. This, I don't know really what the story is. Anyway, it's this guy and he got beat up or something and got killed. And now he's come back as Plasterhead. And then it's got like the...
Seriously, why would they even name their movie fucking Plasterhead? Who's going to be like, oh, that sounds scary.
I know. And then it's got like this cast of like the stupidest, most unlikable characters willingly going to this farmhouse to return some chick's purse. And it's like an abandoned farmhouse. And all the locals are saying, don't go to that farmhouse. No, they're just going to go there anyway. And then just the stupidest shit happens ever. And like this hulking black guy who kind of reminded me of like fucking Kamala. Remember that
Kamala,
wrestler?
The wrestler?
Yeah, reminded, yeah, just kind of like that guy with plaster on his head and clothed. But yeah, I
could. It'd be awesome if he was wearing the grass skirt with the moons painted on his nipples while wearing the plaster head. That'd make the movie even better.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. I don't
it might
know
be what, watchable.
And yeah, this was a tough one to get through. And
it's fucking terrible.
And like Kamala's walking around and there's like no logic whatsoever. And like there's this one part where this Kamala pulls this guy out of a window, and then the girl passes out, and there's a black guy, and he's like looking in the other room, and then like there has to be a time lapse because somehow Kamala brings this like guy he pulled out the window into this other building and ties him up and everything. And the whole time this other black guy is just sort of going through this room, and there's no explanation. Like, oh fuck, I can't even.
Dude, he Jason warped.
This was awful.
Yeah,
awful.
It's terrible.
Not even worth $2.
No.
Okay, so we'll end on a high note. I watched a movie called Spring.
Yep, which I also recently bought but haven't had the opportunity to watch.
Okay, so from 2014. This was written and directed by Justin Benson and co-directed by Aaron Moorhead. And these are the guys behind a movie called Resolution, which I have not seen. Have you seen that?
No, but it's on Netflix, so I keep thinking about
Netflix?
Watching it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I do want to check that out as well. But wow, this is a great movie. This is it's kind of a romance. I mean, they're calling it like Before Mid, like those, remember those Linklater movies?
Oh yeah, Before
Sunrise and all that.
Before Sunrise,
they're calling it that with like as a monster movie, and it's this is a really good movie. So I don't want to give away any spoilers. It's a love story. It's set in Rome. It's got a really great cast. It's got Lou Taylor Pucci,
who got the shit beat out of him in the remake of Evil Dead.
Yeah, he was in the Evil Dead remake.
I loved him in Evil Dead remake.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like a hipster in that.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, and Natty Hilker. And she's great as well. And it also has the guy, one of the guys from The Battery. But wow, this is an awesome movie. Highly, highly recommended. But I did go into this knowing nothing, and I think that's the best way to go.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either. I just had heard praise for it, and I was like, you know, I saw it cheap enough. I was like, I'll buy it.
Yeah. I'd absolutely recommend this if you see it, this one kicking around. Try not to like know anything about it, including looking at the cover. And like if you see it on Netflix, just put aside the time and watch it because it's a really good one.
Cool.
That's it.
That's it. I got four, and then we'll get on to some killer slash creepy kids.
Slash psycho.
As you, yeah, whatever. So going back to my Crimson Peak story, my girlfriend and I were going to see it opening weekend. When we found out it was only playing in Ultra AVX and IMAX and all that bullshit, we decided to go see The Visit, the new M. Night jam.
Right.
And it's structured to be kind of like a found footage-y movie. Because the premise is that this lady's sending her two kids to go visit with the grandparents who she's been estranged from for, you know, 5-10 years, whatever the timeline is. And the older daughter is an inspiring filmmaker. So that's how they get the film footage, is that it's her and her brother filming the visit to the grandparents.
Okay.
So that's how they set that up, which is, you know, it's kind of a, I guess it's a pretty okay thing to do. I mean, I didn't buy some of the banter that the girl was saying about like film angles and stuff. Like she seemed too educated about film for being only like a 14-year-old girl.
Right.
But apart from that, you know, and there were scenes of the of her brother who was like pretending to be a rapper doing these terrible raps and saying ho at the end and all that, and I could have done without that. But they go visit the grandparents, and then obviously something's up with them. They're not quite there. And, you know, it's kind of neat because they get these rules like Gremlins where it's like, don't go out of your room after 9:30, you know, and
oh, okay.
You know, and when they do, they see the grandma doing weird stuff and they're, you know, the grandparents are just off. There's something about them that's off. Like they just right. do weird things. And knowing it's an M. Night movie, of course, there's a twist in there. It's a predictable twist, admittedly, but, you know, considering that I haven't liked a movie of his since Signs, I actually kind of enjoyed this one.
Right.
It was pretty entertaining. It was strongly acted. I really liked the acting in it. And it wasn't a horror movie. It's a black comedy more than anything.
Okay.
Like, you couldn't be judged. I couldn't judge that it wasn't a horror movie, considering that I was in a theater packed with teenagers who screamed every chance they got. And I don't know if they were just being assholes and screaming just because you're in a movie theater and you want to act up and be cool.
Right.
Or if they were actually scared. But I took it more as a black comedy. I had fun with it. I had a few laughs. It was like 90 minutes. It was a good time. It's a good time.
I think M. Night's got to like win my trust back.
This one's a good step.
I don't
step.
Know if I'll check it out on like Netflix or something. But then if it's good, then I'll check
it's
it out.
It's a good step towards that for me.
Yeah, he just let me down so
happening,
much.
After the happening, I'm like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, and there was the other one, The Village.
Lady in the
was
Water
terrible.
Wasn't very good either. I actually didn't mind The Village. Village was okay.
Oh, I hated the
but
twist.
But Lady in the
that,
Water,
yeah.
I was like, kind of lame. And then Happening came along, I'm like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, why did that movie suck so much?
Because it was Mark Wahlberg giving the worst acting performance of his career, if you can believe that.
He's not bad, though.
He's terrible in that, man.
Yeah, and he is terrible in that.
And the whole premise about, like, you know, it's not Day of the Triffids, dude. You can't pull it off like Wyndham did.
Right.
So, yeah, not good. But this one actually restored some faith I have in M. Night, and I'm hoping he's got another one coming out soon.
Okay.
That's also horror-based that I'm hoping will be okay.
Well, he was such a great, like, light back in the day.
Yeah,
like,
I really liked Signs. I like Unbreakable. Yeah. I like Sixth Sense. And
yeah.
He lost it, and he wasn't able to get it back, and he became a joke.
Yeah.
He basically became a, like, you know, there was that Robot Chicken joke where they always had him on, like, what a twist, and things like that. And he just, you know, he sullied his name really bad. You know, he yeah. did, like, The Last Airbender and, like, that movie with Will Smith and his kid, that After Earth, which, you know.
Did he direct that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's, ooh. Like, the worst fucking combo of actors ever. Will Smith and his annoying fucking bratty kid who thinks he's all
oh,
that
I
and
know.
A bag of chips.
I thought he did that Devil movie, though, that was supposed to
he
be
He wrote
good.
It.
Yeah.
But it was okay. It wasn't great.
But it was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was huh. okay. So
yeah, I'm interested to see where he goes next.
It was pretty good. Yeah. I'd recommend watching it if you are able to get past your hurdles of M. Night.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Low expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Low expectations.
Yeah.
After that, we also, what else did I see? Oh, I'm doing a franchise now too.
Ooh.
So I'm doing Ghoulies though.
Ooh.
So I watched Ghoulies 2.
What about Ghoulies 1?
Well, I watched a while ago. I don't watch the franchises as quick as you. I watched Ghoulies about 6-7 months ago, so that's why I didn't talk
about
it.
Did we talk about it?
No.
Okay.
But Ghoulies 2 is actually a better movie than Ghoulies 1. Because in Ghoulies 2, they've streamlined it. They've done the perfect setting for the ghoulies to run rampant in, which is a carnival.
Okay.
Where they sneak their way into a haunted house and then proceed to do all sorts of ghoulie havoc.
Nice.
On all the punk rockers. And,
in the haunted house.
In the haunted house.
Ooh.
But it's basically about a freak show where they hitch a ride to this freak show carnival haunted house thing. And then this businessman comes along and wants to shut it down. And the ghoulies are a big star attraction because everyone thinks they're part of the show. But then at the end, the ghoulies get loose and wreak havoc. And there's an epic moment where this one ghoulie who looks like a cat, who's awesome, by the way, because he runs around the movie going, row, row, and like shooting at people in shooting gallery and stuff. He high fives another fucking ghoulie.
Nice.
Best scene ever.
I want to see this.
And this brings in the toilet scene that we were promised in the original and they didn't really deliver.
Ooh, maybe I need to check out the Ghoulies movies too.
Nice. Not a great movie. Don't get me wrong. They are what they are. They're Empire Pictures. They're Charles Band produced. You get what you get. You get rubbery puppets by John Carl Buchler, things like that. But it was kind of fun. Directed by Albert Band, which is Charles's father.
Yep.
Who also did I Bury the Living, which I believe we've talked about past. Entertaining if you have, again, low expectations.
Got it.
This seems to be a low expectation week for me.
Yeah.
So after that, I went to the theaters on Halloween night because I'm not like most people. I don't go to Halloween parties and, you know, all that shit, mainly because I don't have any friends. Ha! But we went and saw Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Which bombed huge.
It did. I'm surprised.
I don't know why. It was fun.
Yeah, it looked fun.
You go into the movie with what you're expecting, right? It's the same thing. We had that story about Hobo with a Shotgun, right? Coming out of Hobo with a Shotgun, someone's like, that was stupid. What were you expecting?
Yeah.
Same thing with this. You look at the title of the movie. What are you expecting?
Yeah.
A stupid movie about Boy Scouts fighting zombies. That's exactly what you're getting. It has lots of fun stuff in it. It's got a little bit of gore. I was a little bit hesitant going in because it's co-written and directed by Christopher Landon.
Right.
Michael Landon's son,
yeah.
The actor. And the reason I'm hesitant is because he's responsible for all the Paranormal Activity sequels from 2 up to the Marked Ones. And 4 is the worst sequel ever made.
Ever made.
Ever made.
Wow.
I hate Paranormal Activity 4.
Wow, that is huge statement
it's
you just
pretty,
made.
It's pretty fucking terrible.
It's worse than Halloween 8?
Yes.
Wow.
And he wrote that. So I had kind of low expectations again, but I had fun. It was a fun movie for Halloween. When you're thinking of Halloween night, you're not wanting to watch a really serious, hardcore movie. You're not wanting to watch like Necromantic or, you know, Martyrs or, you know, Serbian film or something like that. You want something fun. You want something along the lines of, you know, like Critters or Killer Clowns or something like that. And this totally filled that.
Yeah, it looks really fun. I just felt like I didn't really hear any hype about this.
There wasn't really.
And I didn't like the title. And like, once I saw the trailer, I was excited about this.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun movie.
If you hadn't seen the trailer, I don't know if you'd be that. Yeah, I couldn't have cared less until
there was
I saw the
something
trailer.
Actually in the Red Band trailer that wasn't in the movie.
Oh.
So the scene where they're being chased by the zombies and they close the fence really fast and the one cop zombie, the female cop zombie, gets stuck and her shirt rips open and shows off her big zombie implants. Yeah. The scene where he's like, oh my God, in slow motion's in there. But in the trailer, he takes a selfie with them.
Right.
In the movie, he just goes up and like squishes them in his hands.
Chris is doing those like,
I'm doing the
grabbing your breasts.
Yeah. So that's what he does in the movie. But it's a fun little movie. It's exactly what I wanted from it. There's a couple cool music moments in it. Like there's a scene in it where they sing Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears to a zombie to distract it because see the zombies wearing a Britney Spears t-shirt.
Nice.
And then in the finale when they're going to do all their zombie ass kicking, they play Rock You Like a Hurricane by the Scorpions.
Oh, cool.
So sold. Fun little movie. Check it out when it comes out. I mean,
is it still playing?
I don't know if it's still playing. It didn't do very well.
Yeah, I want to see that.
I know it's actually, I think it's weird because I think it's already on video on demand.
Really?
Because I think it was one of those movies that they launched where it's like same day video on demand as theatrical.
I don't get that.
And it only went in 1,500 theaters because they did partially video on demand.
That's such a weird way to...
I guess it's just their way to try and recoup money, I guess. I guess they make good profit off video on demand. I don't agree with it because I'd rather see a movie in theaters.
Yeah. Who was the girl?
I can't remember her name.
Okay.
But she was really good in it. She played the tough girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was weird because I said to my girlfriend after, I'm like, was it just me or is she really tall?
Hmm.
And then we looked it up and she's like 5'10". So, you know, fairly tall, but she like looks like she's towering over these Boy Scouts.
Right.
But I think that was on purpose.
Right.
Because they're supposed to be like 14, 15-year-old horny guys who are like thrown into the middle of fighting a zombie. And I love the name of the strip club in the movie. Lawrence of Arabia. So damn good.
No, I want to see this.
That's like
for sure.
One of the best jokes ever.
Yeah, this looks like a good one.
So then my last movie was I went back and I rewatched a movie from 1988 called Dead Heat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and this is starring Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo.
Yeah.
And it's a buddy cop movie with zombies.
Yeah.
So basically the premise is, you know, Joe Piscopo and Treat Williams are cop partners, and they end up getting involved with this pharmaceutical, like, scientific company, and they have the ability to resurrect people as zombies. So after this really cool opening scene where they, like, thwart this jewelry store heist where the bad guys just won't seem to die because they've been like they're zombie types, they're like looking into the case and they end up at this pharmaceutical company, and then through an accident Treat Williams' character, who's called Roger Mortis, best name ever, he gets killed, but they resurrect him. So it's
right, yeah,
zombie,
yeah.
Roger Mortis with Joe Piscopo, who goes around like flexing his muscles and making one-liners and kind of really badly acting and looking off into the distance a lot.
Yeah.
Trying to fight their way to find the solution to everything. There's a really cool scene in a Chinese deli where all the animals come to life. The effects are by Steve Johnson, so they're okay, really great. Cool, yeah. Practical effects. And it was directed by Mark Goldblatt, who directed the Punisher movie with Dolph Lundgren, which I really love, even though a lot of people don't.
Right.
But he's known as a Hollywood editor. He's famous for editing.
Right.
He edited the 70s Piranha. He edited the Terminator movies. He also did Enter the Ninja, The Howling. So he's got a really good resume of movies he edited.
Right.
And I don't love Dead Heat. I think it loses a lot of steam in the second half, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I remember being excited for this, but it didn't really make an impression.
Yeah, like, it doesn't. It has its moments, yeah. But overall, it's not a movie that I feel like I should be revisiting a lot. And I have the Divi Max Anchor Bay DVD.
I think I probably do,
and,
too.
And, you know, sometimes I wonder why I bought it, but then I'm like, it's got its moments.
Is that a print?
I think so.
Maybe you can make some money.
Maybe. But that's it. That's all I got. So let's dive into the kids.
All right.
It's all about the kids now.
All right.
So
this one's for the children.
I don't know the next line. The children everywhere. This one's for the children. I'm sure people don't want to hear my fucking terrible singing voice. So the first thing that popped in my mind when we were talking about killer kids was the originator to me, which would be the Bad Seed, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like this genre.
This is
overall.
This is my first memory of killer kids, though, was Bad Seed.
Was it?
From 1956.
Yeah.
Based on a William March novel, which is a really fun novel, starring Patty McCormick, who was 8 years old at the time. And she has that look, right? She's got like the little pigtails and she's blonde and she seems really innocent. But of course, we all know she isn't. She's just the Bad Seed. And, you know, it's kind of a fun movie. It's the 50s. It's got that kind of that 50s vibe where it's kind of talky and stuff. But there's some really hilariously funny scenes of like Rhoda, her name is, asking for her shoes back from some rednecky guy, and they have this big argument and she gets more and more pissed off at him, and she's really pissed off through this whole movie.
Yeah, she has that pissed off look,
yeah,
on her
she
face.
She just looks pissed off.
I remember watching this at my grandma's house, my grandma and grandfather, and Yeah, I didn't understand why she was so mad.
Well, because she's a bad seed, man. Like, she's not all there.
But it was, I was like a kid. Like, this is before I was into horror movies, and I just was like, why is she so mad?
So if you kind of want to see where these things originate, I'd say you could watch The Bad Seed for sure. But, yeah. Because that's really, like, the 50s. I mean, think about the topic to begin with, right? Like, killer kids. This is kind of a taboo thing in a way.
Certainly was, yeah.
Because... okay, there's rules in movies.
It still is a taboo.
Like, there's
thing.
Unwritten rules in movies, right? Like, one of the unwritten rules is you don't kill children on screen.
No.
And, you know, that's going to happen in a couple of the movies we're talking about tonight.
Yeah.
But for me, what's fascinating about the whole topic is the fact that people are afraid their kids are going to do this stuff, right? Because kids are always seen as being innocent and pure and all that stuff. But, you know, they're saying, well, what if they weren't? What if you gave birth to this kid and then 6 to 10 years later, they want to slit your throat?
Yeah.
And that's why these movies appeal to me, because I personally do not have any interest of having my own children. And I do find children to be fairly annoying. But if they're murdering people, I kind of like them.
Yeah. And I just said,
this
I don't,
ain't your
I
genre.
Don't, I don't like the genre at all. I mean, so this was a bit of a slog to get through.
There's got to be some that you like, though.
Yeah, it's just overall, I mean, I just don't really like kids in movies in general.
Right.
So watching a movie about them, and I don't have the same issues with children that you do, but...
my issues are pretty hardcore.
But I just don't really, when I'm going to watch a movie, I just generally don't really want to watch kids in it. But, so a lot of these movies I haven't gone out of my way to see. I mean,
right.
I've seen some of them just because they've sort of come around, but I don't think I would ever go out of my way to watch a movie that was about killer kids. Although, when looking into this episode, there is some that I'm kind of excited to watch.
Like, for me, I found it interesting that a lot of the earlier ones were based on novels, right? Like, because Bad Seed was based on a novel by William March. The next one I want to talk about is a 1960 movie called Village of the Damned.
Yeah.
Which was based on a novel by John Wyndham called The Midwich Cuckoos.
Right.
And John Wyndham, I love his stuff. He was a very prolific British author, and he wrote the novel that The Stepford Wives is based on. He wrote Day of the Triffids. Oh, wait, sorry. Stepford Wives. Back that up. I'm wrong on that fact. You gave me that quizzical look. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm wrong. Day of the Triffids was based on one of his novels. He also wrote a book called Chalky, which is about a kid and his invisible friend, which is really cool. And he wrote The Chrysalids, which everybody read when they were in school, about these psychic kids in like an apocalyptic wasteland.
Okay.
So he's a good author. So it was a good match. And the thing about Village of the Damned is it's a group of kids who are like super fucking creepy in this movie, right? They've got those blank stares.
Yeah.
And they've got like
hair.
Blonde hair, and they're like their school.
Yeah.
Kind of. I feel like Wyndham and the filmmakers kind of base this. I'm going to throw this out there. I'm probably wrong, but I think they kind of took a little bit out of Nazi Germany for this. Because you remember how.
Yeah,
especially
that lead kid in Village of the Damned.
Like, you remember how Hitler's big regime was like the blonde-haired, blue-eyed kind of thing. And I feel like they brought that into Village of the Damned. And that, like, I'm not sure when The Midwich Cuckoos was written as a novel, but I think it probably has its lines up with World War II in a way. And I thought that's interesting. Like, that's an interesting thing that they made this killer kid movies and kind of based it on Nazi Germany. I might be wrong, but I get that feeling deep down.
It makes
sense.
It's certainly an interesting hypothesis.
Yeah, and it was a fun movie. There was a sequel to it called Children of the Damned a couple years later, which isn't nearly as good. And then, unfortunately, John Carpenter decided to remake it in 1995 with, like, Kirstie Alley and Christopher Reeve. And not a very successful remake.
Yeah, I never saw the remake.
I didn't even bring it up on the remakes episode because it's just one of those ones that I kind of shrugged at when it came out.
Yeah. No, I mean, the original is definitely a classic.
Well, it's got that stark black and white photography, and it's got more... I feel it more classy because it's kind of Britishy.
Well, and that lead kid, that little blonde
he's
one.
He's a creepy fucker.
Really creepy, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I just wanted to also mention that The Bad Seed also had a remake in the 80s.
That was a TV
movie, with Blair Brown and David Carradine. Yeah.
Blair Brown?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Who was the evil kid?
I don't know.
Yeah. Probably sucked.
Yeah.
David Carradine. Anything a remake with Carradines can't be that great.
Poor David.
Just saying.
I don't know if I really have a lot of other kind of ones from the back in the day.
Well, like if we're going chronological, those are the two that stick out for me. And then the 70s has a bunch of ones that actually
I have two more. I have two more from the 60s. We'll just get out of the way really quick.
Okay.
One of them's got a, like kind of a ghost kid, but well, it is kind of...
Maybe we should kind of go chronologically.
Sure.
Okay.
Kind of a ghostly... A ghost kind of creepy kid is in Mario Bava's Kill Baby Kill.
Which I haven't seen.
Thought I'd mention that one. And then the other one that is definitely a classic that I want to throw out there was... it just came to mind when I thought of killer kids was Kira Shone in Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
With the spade.
The trowel.
Yeah, that's like that. That was probably the first thing that popped into my mind.
The thing about that is she's not really a killer. She's a killer kid, technically.
But she's a zombie. But
it doesn't really fit with what we're talking.
Mm.
I was going more for the psychological, sociopathic tendencies of children.
Yeah. I'm just saying that when we thought of a killer child, she's the one that came to mind.
It's definitely one of the most memorable scenes in Night of the Living Dead. Yeah. Like, that's the scene that strikes a pretty heavy chord on you when you see a girl kill her own mother in cold blood.
Especially with that sound.
Yeah, like that's a pretty intense scene for that movie, for sure.
All right, so moving on to the 70s.
Well, the 70s ones, there's about six, maybe. I wrote down about five from the 70s that I wanted to bring up. Let's start with the obvious one, Larry Cohen's It's Alive from 1974. And this is actually a pretty fun little movie. It's We're going below killer kids. We're going killer babies.
Yes.
So the basic
killer baby.
Baby. The babies is
baby.
Later.
Baby.
Babies is later.
Yes.
In the sequels.
Yeah.
But It's Alive has John P. Ryan as a guy who's about to have his first child.
Yeah.
And something goes terribly wrong in the actual operating room. Let's just say the baby does not come into this world in a very good form. Everyone in the operation room gets killed in bloody ways. And then this baby goes on a rampage because it's a demon baby.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting, apart from scenes of like the milkman being attacked in the back of his truck, which was awesome and stuff, Larry Cohen movies are interesting because they're different.
Yeah.
I don't exactly love all the Larry Cohen movies as much as I probably should. But he always has that weird message in his movies that I'm finding, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Like with this one, it's John P. Ryan. You know, when you find out your kid's a demon and it's got fang teeth and it's crawling around in the sewers of New York City.
It's an ugly-ass baby.
Yeah. Rick Baker had a hand in creating it.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that. Huh.
So, you know, you have a demon baby. It's crawling around in the sewers. Everyone wants it dead. It's popping out every once in a while to murder people. You're going to be like, that's not my kid.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is John P. Ryan's character actually is like, that's my kid.
Yeah.
I want to be a father to this child. Yeah. You know, I have that paternal instinct to take care of this kid and protect it from these people who are trying to kill it.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of Cohen doing that. Like, that's him bringing that satirical but yet serious tone to his movie, which he does a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he has it a lot in the stuff about commercialism. And, you know, Q has inklings of that too, and all of his movies just have that little niggling of, you know, that tone to it that I find completely interesting, and it kind of separates it from other genre fare.
Yeah,
admittedly. And you know, there were sequels to this movie. About 4 years later he did It Lives Again, which was, I believe, more than one in this one, more than one killer baby. But I have Michael Moriarty, who became a Coen regular as the doting dad this time. And then in 86, he went back again and made, which is the most bizarre sequel I've ever seen, called It's Alive 3, Island of the Alive, which is like Karen Black and an island of mutant babies who are human-sized. Very fucking weird movie. But
I've only seen the first one
of
these.
It's Alive's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, but it brings something to the table that I think a lot of those 70s drive-in flicks didn't.
But it's slower. It's not a It's not like your typical.
Yeah, it's just punctuated with those scenes, like, you know.
It's got scenes, but it's kind of a slow burn.
Yeah, but I really like it. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. This was another one that was remade in 2008.
Unfortunately.
Bijou Phillips.
I haven't seen it, and I don't want to see it. I'm not interested either. Another one from the 70s that I had, which is a very important one, is The Omen.
Yep.
With Damien. Everybody knows Damien, right?
Yep, this is definitely another one that comes
up. This is a big Hollywood movie, too.
Yep.
Because this is Gregory Peck and Lee Remick, directed by Richard Donner.
Yep.
Who hadn't... I think this is like... This is pre-Superman 2 Richard Donner.
It's pre-Superman 1.
It's pre-Superman 1 yep. Richard Donner. It's also... you know, this is like the first time I was aware of him, I think, as a director.
Yeah, I think for me it was Superman, but...
Yeah. But the Omen, the basic premise is, you know, about a demon kid, like... The Antichrist.
Named Damien.
Yeah, Satan being reborn in child form.
Yeah.
And the thing about this movie is it's super creepy. It's got that music that everyone remembers, that Hictus Sumanus, every time Damien's up to no goods. Harvey Stevens, who plays Damien, is so fucking creepy in this movie.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Like, he just has that look, like that glowering look. Like, there's that iconic image of him, like, standing in the graveyard with the tombstone behind him, the cross tombstone behind him, just glaring at you in his schoolboy uniform, and you're just like, fuck, that kid's creepy, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the memorable moments of, like, the birthday party, where the nanny's like, this is for you, Damien, and hangs herself and things like that. It's a pretty intense movie for a Hollywood movie. And, you know, and it was a success. It's based on a David Seltzer, I don't know what his name is, a novel again. And, you know, I found they went more gore in Damien the Omen 2, which is the sequel that followed it up a couple years later. But they took this series in kind of an interesting path, I thought.
Right.
Because by the time Final Conflict rolled around in 81, it had a grown-up Damien trying to get into the government.
Played by Sam Neill.
And that's interesting to me. Like, because they took a killer kid movie and tried to make it, build it into something more than it was. Because in the second movie, he was like a teenage, preteen. He was in a military school. They'd ramped up the kills, you know, they had people being decapitated by panes of glass, they had people getting their eyes pecked out by ravens, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they had that religious fervor. Like, this is one that was kind of, The Exorcist kind of opened the doors on religious horror, and Damien just stepped in there to be like, hey, don't forget about me.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill everybody because I'm the Antichrist.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually didn't really mind even the 2006 redo. With Julia Stiles.
Right.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen the remake. I just actually bought the box set, as you know, so I'm looking forward to rewatching these.
Shot for shot. And Omen 4, which came out in 91, is a weird one because it's a made-for-TV sequel. It's not related to the first three, and it's got a killer female kid.
Okay.
And the only things I remember about it is there's a cool scene in it where someone gets thrown out a window and lands on one of those... you know those playground kind of spinning wheels, the Ferris wheel kind of things where you push them?
Like a merry-go-round?
Yeah, like a merry-go-round, and then you jump on it and you get dizzy.
Yeah.
Where he lands on that, and he's just an aerial shot of him spinning around on that dead. Yeah. And it's directed by Dominique Othon Gerard, who did Halloween 5.
Right, okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Nice.
But The Omen's good. Omen's a good movie.
Yeah, no, sure. I definitely remember the original.
You're going to have fun with that box.
Harvey Stevens, definitely, yeah.
He's fucking creepy.
Iconic kid. He never really did anything else either.
No, you're going to like that box set, I think.
Nice. Maybe that'll be next.
So do you got anything from the 70s, or should I keep going?
Are we going into the 80s already?
No, I've got 70s still.
Well, I mean, you did mention The Exorcist. I mean, of course, we should give a shout out to The Exorcist.
Yeah, that's not really a killer or creepy kid. That's just that unfortunate kid.
Yeah, again, but yeah, this is where we kind of differed on the topic, but I mean...
Yeah, you blurred the lines a lot more than I did.
Well, here's what happened. I asked Chris if we should do, if we were going to do Creepy Kids a la, what did I say?
Fuck, I don't remember exactly.
A la Danny from The Shining.
Yeah.
And he comes back, Psycho Kids.
Children of the Corn, I gave you examples.
So, him meaning killer kids.
Yeah.
And me thinking, okay, Psycho Kids, well, that would mean Danny from The Shining.
So how did you explain this to me? What was the Talking Heads analogy you gave me?
Well, I said if Psycho and Killer meant the same thing, they would have just called the song Psycho Psycho. But they didn't, did they? Qu'est-ce que c'est? Yeah. Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Anyway.
Okay,
stick to the 70s.
I mentioned The Exorcist. I feel better.
Okay.
Okay, so why don't you keep going, and then I'll just fill in whatever.
So I have... Let's see what we got left for the 70s here. I've got three left from the 70s.
All right.
So the one that's a late 70s, 1979 movie that just came out on Criterion on Blu-ray is The Brood.
All right, yep.
This is a David Cronenberg movie. This is when David Cronenberg was at his peak of that weird kind of existential body horror, kind of weird psychological fucked up kind of shit that he was doing back then.
So like The Shivers.
Yeah.
Videodrome era. And
this is about Samantha Eggar birthing these like weird hooded children, dwarf like fucking weird, like Jawas from Star Wars kind of.
I don't remember this movie. Like, she doesn't give birth to them all, does she?
She births them, dude.
All of them?
All of them.
How does she fit them all inside
her? Dude, don't question. I haven't seen this in a while either, but
I thought those were like
she ends up at
things
this, like,
that you see in mirrors and
she ends
shit.
Up at this like hospital.
Yeah, it's like some weird
with
medical.
Oliver Reed is the main doctor, and Art Hindle plays her husband, and she's got these psychological issues that force her to like give birth to the brood.
Yeah.
Who go around just fucking murdering people. And they have like they seriously look like the little guys in the Phantasm movies. You know, the little midget hooded, cloaked. And they look like something from Star Wars, but the thing is they're going to beat you the fuck to death with a meat tenderizer in the brood.
See, I don't remember them being in it very much.
Dude,
I remember like one scene near the end.
Meat tenderizer is so fucking good.
But that was it. Isn't that all they're in it? Or
they're in it quite a bit.
Popping up over
they're
and over.
In it quite a bit, but I just found them to be so
They
so
were fucking creepy.
Weird
for sure.
Looking.
Yeah.
And like, you know, what was with movies in the 70s with like these, like, people in brown robe, hooded robes running around like The Brood, Phantasm, Star Wars. Like, what the fuck's with that?
I don't know.
Were people afraid of cultists back then? Is this satanic panic dribbling over into killer kids here?
I was out with some kids the other night wearing brown robes. I'm glad I didn't watch The Brood
first.
Did
they meat tenderize?
No, they didn't have meat tenderizers. They had scythes.
Oh, nice, nice. Now, the next one I'm going to mention from the 70s is, for me, my absolute, positively favorite killer kids movie of all time.
Yeah, you and a lot of people. For
it's
sure.
A 1976 Spanish jam called Who Can Kill a Child.
Right.
I love this fucking movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen this.
Originally called Island of the Damned.
Yep.
Originally cut to shit, but thankfully Dark Sky put it out on DVD a few years back, uncut. So goddamn good, dude. Directed by Narciso Ibanez Serrador.
Mm-hmm.
Who also made a movie in the 1969 called The House That Screamed, which I really want to see now because it's about girls at being murdered at a school for like wayward teenage girls in France.
Nice.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But Who Can Kill a Child? The basis of this movie is a couple going on vacation and ending up on this island where the parents have been murdered by the kids.
Yeah.
And the kids want them next.
Yeah.
And there's some fucking really awesome imagery in this movie, man. They fucking play pinata with a live adult human being in this movie.
Cool.
Like, they string them up by their ankles and beat them the fuck to death with sticks. You know, there's like kids being machine gunned down in this movie. There's fucking kids like just being creepy as shit. This movie is so good. So good. And Stephen King ripped this fucking movie off for Children of the Corn, and I don't care what anybody says.
Right.
Because his story came out a year or two after this movie. And the correlations between the two are just so close.
Right.
And this is the best. Seriously. There's just something about this movie where you're just watching it, you're going into it thinking it's going to be cheesy. And the acting at first is a little bit off because the wife character is kind of a grating, and I think she's meant to be. But once those kids start doing their business, the movie gets so damn good.
Oh, I'm sure it is. This is why I don't understand why you don't watch more European shit, because...
I loved it, dude.
Yeah, I know.
I don't understand why I don't watch more European shit, too, because I love this. I love Let Sleeping Corpses Lie.
Yeah.
You know, I love a lot of these European movies I'm watching, but I always kind of shy away from European movies.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Even though I fully admit that most of the good horror movies that are coming out now are coming from Europe.
Yeah.
Like inside.
Yeah. No, I want to see this movie for
sure.
So
good, dude.
I don't know why I've been putting it off. I think just because I don't own it and I don't really want to buy the... I'm kind of expecting that it's going to come out on Blue eventually.
I asked Dark Sky, who has the rights to it, and they said not planned.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, that's weird. This was also remade.
Come out and play?
Yeah, in 2013.
Yeah, no. Not interested. The story behind Who Can Kill a Child is, when I first started going out with my girlfriend, this is one of the first movies we watched together.
Nice.
So I knew she was awesome the minute she was willing to watch a movie called Who Can Kill a Child with me.
Are you interested in the remake? Like, just to see like how far they went?
I saw a trailer, and it looks like they... are sticking really closely to the original.
Right.
In like just the setting and things like that. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to watch it. I don't know if I want to sully my awesome memories of the original.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be really, really able to like just completely detach from your feelings like with remakes as
well,
we talked about.
Yeah. Like cause that's what I was able to do with the Evil Dead remake. Yeah. But I'm not sure if I could do that with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a rough slope to try and.
Fair enough. And I know with a lot of European movies too, especially when you're starting, you know, when you're not as into it and you're just starting to discover those, they really do make an impression. So
yeah,
I hear you.
So damn good. That's the movie that we're going to talk about here that I recommend the most.
Nice.
And I have one more 70s one, and then you can dive in. And it's one I haven't seen, but I've always been curious about.
Yep.
It's from 74 as well as It's Alive. It's called Devil Times 5.
Yep.
And the reason I'm curious about this is because it's about five escaped kids from a friggin' mental institution who go to a, like, they prey on the adults at this vacation lodge.
Yeah.
And it just sounds so awesome.
Yeah.
It's got Leif Garrett. And Sorrel Book, who played Boss Hogg on Dukes of Hazzard, in it.
I don't know how big of a... I know, but yeah, Sorrel Book's one of the main characters, but I don't know how much of a role Leif Garrett has
it's
in it.
It's just funny
but...
to say Leif Garrett's in Devil Times 5.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I think this is...
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it,
It looks so freaking good.
It's directed by Massimo Dallamano. He did a really great giallo called What Have You Done to Solange?
Yep.
I'm sorry, I'm getting my shit mixed up.
Oh, you're going my route.
Sorry. Yeah, we'll talk about that one in a second. It was directed by uncredited David Sheldon, co-directed, and he was a producer for AIP.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would expect it's got some exploitation elements as well. And watching the trailer, it looked really cool. Yeah, I hadn't really heard of this movie before, but yeah, these kids use like bear traps and piranhas and shit.
I really want to see it, but yeah. Unfortunately, the Code Red DVD's out of print.
Oh, Code Red DVDs.
I know.
It's probably not really out of print. It's just Bill's
Code Red makes me angry sometimes. Sorry, Code Red. You put out good shit, but trying to get your stuff is annoying.
Yeah, but and this is exactly what I meant. Like, this is why I love doing some of these episodes, because, I mean, you know, in looking into this movie, obviously we both found, or into this topic, we both found out about this movie that we didn't really know about. And now we're both stoked to see a movie. So that's what I'm really hoping comes across to the listeners as well. Because, this looks like a really good one that's pretty unknown. So,
that's all I got from the 70s. Yeah. You got anything to toss in?
Well, we'll bring up the one I just started talking about, unfortunately. So this one is directed by Massimo Dallamano, who did What Have You Done to Solange. This is called The Night Child from 1975.
Don't know it.
So this stars... It's just your typical, it looks like kind of a Exorcist ripoff with like a possession angle. But the main draw here is it stars Nicoletta Elmi.
Okay.
And she was a creepy kid in a few Italian movies, but this is kind of her big one.
Italian movie as well then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Joanna Cassidy, who plays Zora in Blade Runner, she's in it as well. I think she plays the mom. But this Nicoletta Elmi, if you're sort of a passing by Italian horror fan, you'd probably know her as the woman in Demons who brings people into the movie theater with the really long red hair.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You know that, you know, yeah, she's pretty iconic in that role, but this is her as a child actor playing like a psycho exorcist ripoff. So that one's definitely one to check out.
I just want to quickly, cause you're talking about Italian ones from the '70s reminds me of Shock. Lamberto Bava's,
right.
Who directed that one?
Lamberto.
Lamberto, yeah. Bava's Shock, which over in North America was known as Beyond the Door 2 for a long time. Right. That's got that creepy blonde kid in it where he's like kind of demonic. And I remember there's a scene where he puts like razor blades on the keys of a piano.
Oh, really? That kid from, I think it's the kid from House by the Cemetery.
I think so.
The Giovanni.
The blonde kid. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because that kid creeped me out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah, and then the other 70s one I'd bring up is The Child from 1977.
Harry Novak.
Yeah, brought to you by Harry Novak. He didn't direct it, but
Harry Novak production.
Yeah, it looked kind of, did look kind of,
it's out on something weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't look that great to me. And I think there's one more here. The Children, when was that made?
That's 1980.
1980, okay.
Which is on my list as well. So why don't we kick off the 80s with it?
Yeah, because we're kind of in the 80s now.
So The Children, a movie I don't really remember a lot of. Troma's got it out on DVD right now. But I remember it's about this school bus full of kids who basically drive through a toxic radioactive cloud and become...
kind of like zombies.
Like zombies. They have like black fingernails.
But they're not really zombies.
And they go around the town killing everyone, and the adults have to try and stop them.
They like microwave people to death. Yeah, like they hug.
Yeah,
they hug their parents,
and they turn black.
Yeah, they like char. Like it's weird.
It's super low budget. I remember. I don't really think it's that great, but I still want to see it again.
Yeah, I want to see it too because this also had some Friday the 13th influence because Harry Manfredini does the music.
Yeah.
And Barry Abrams is the DP. So both of whom worked on the original Friday the 13th.
My only problem is that Troma put it out on DVD.
Yeah.
Because Troma's got a really sketchy history when it comes to transfers and stuff, so I'm kind of worried about that.
Yeah, they do have a sketchy history, but they have picked up some pretty cool titles.
Yeah,
because Troma also put out Beware Children at Play, which looks like a lot of fun.
We're gonna talk
well.
About that in the 80s here.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen it?
I've seen it.
Okay, so that's, why don't you go ahead and talk
why
about
don't
that
we talk about it. That, well, Beware Children at Play came out in 89. It's a really weird because it's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. And it had this weird, like, religious angle to it, where it's like these religious zealots kind of going after the kids. But the kids are like, you know, they're killing everyone, obviously. But the thing about this movie I remember is that the last 15 minutes, the makers of it had huge fucking balls because they kill these kids so graphically that I'm just like, that scene alone made this movie worth watching.
Wow.
You know, there's like fucking arrows flying through kids' necks and like they get killed wholesale slaughter in this movie.
Wow.
And the guy who made it, Mick Cribbin, has made nothing else, but he's worked sound on like Spider-Man and stuff like that. It's weird.
Yeah, that's so weird, eh?
But yeah, it's not a great movie. I don't recommend it. But it had the wicked poster. The poster looks like a street sign.
Yeah.
And it's got like, it looks like a children's crossing sign, but it's got the kid holding up a knife behind the back of the adult. It's like pretty awesome marketing.
No, definitely. Well, Troma, right?
Yeah. If nothing else, they do marketing right.
Yeah.
It's not great. Not great.
No. Okay.
No. So what else do we got from the 80s here? Well, let's talk about Bloody Birthday.
All right.
From 1981, because this is another one that I have a lot of fun with still to this day.
Right.
And this is stupid. The setup for it is stupid because it's three kids born during the exact same time in the exact same hospital during a solar eclipse who become the best of friends. So there's a lot of coincidences going on in Bloody Birthday right away. And then on their 10th birthday, their psychopathic tendencies come to the forefront. And they just go around killing people.
Yeah, this looks awesome.
You know,
I've never seen this
either.
They
plant like a skateboard at the bottom of the stairs for the sheriff to slip on. They fucking play hide and seek in this junkyard and force the kid to hide himself in a fucking fridge, which if you remember when you were a kid, that was like a big warning, like kids are hiding themselves in fridges. Don't do it. Like that was a big thing in the 80s because kids were apparently quite stupid when they played hide and seek. But the most memorable thing for me is Billy Jacoby is one of the kids. And this is a guy, he's called Billy Jane now, but he stole scenes in like just one of the guys. He was the sarcastic brother. He was the main actor in that gem we watched together called Party Camp.
Well, you've talked about this guy before.
Yeah, and I love him. He's great. He was in Dr. Alien, directed by Dave DeCoutu, which is, you know, he takes a serum that makes him like hot as hell to all the ladies.
So who was he in this? Which one of the kids was he?
He was the one with the glasses.
Okay.
Who, there's a scene in it where he like, he's holding a handgun and he like smirks at somebody, which I think is an awesome scene. It's just a fun movie. It's not great.
Yeah.
Lori Lethen is the main female lead in it who has to try and stop them. And it's just fun. It's co-stars Julie Brown, who a lot of us know from doing parody songs in the 80s. She was a comedian. She did like Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun and Cause I'm a Blonde. She went on to co-write and co-star in Earth Girls Are Easy with Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum. And this one she plays the sister of one of the killer kids, which is in the most creepiest scene ever. He charges his friends, the other kids who are murderous kids, to pay a quarter to look through a peephole in their closet to watch her undress.
Nice.
So awesome. You know, I like peep show scenes in movies. What can I say? I guess I'm a pervert.
Yeah, you're a Porky's fan.
I'm a Porky's fan.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's a pretty fun movie. It's a pretty fun movie.
Great. Is that out on DVD?
Severin Blu-ray, man.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Lots of fun. There's an obvious 80s one that we can bring up, which we already kind of talked about a little bit, called Children of the Corn.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it on the King episode as well.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly gloss it over. It's based on his story. It's a 1984 movie starring Peter Horton and Linda Hamilton as this couple who end up in the town of Gatlin where, you know, the kids have killed the parents. And it opens with a pretty awesome scene where they massacre everyone in the diner.
Yeah.
Because they're following the lead of Isaac, who's like this preacher kind of kid who wants them to worship he who walks behind the rose.
Yeah.
It's got that fucking kid Malachi who's so creepy in this.
Courtney Gaines
with that fucking red hair. And like he just looks creepy in this movie. Was he the guy who went on to, he played a psycho in something else, but I can't remember what.
I know I've seen him in something else. I can't remember though.
Yeah, but it's not a great movie.
No.
It's entertaining.
That opening scene's great, like you said. Yeah. And
the thing that blows my mind is there's 8 fucking sequels. Like, how did that happen?
I don't know, man.
How did they make 8 fucking Children of the Corn movies? How did they even do a remake in the late 2000s,
too? Don't get me started on the remake.
Like, I don't get it. How could a story so basic that ripped off Who Can Kill a Child become such a franchise?
Because killer kids movies, man. People
like
them. I guess.
Like, the first couple ones are okay, but when's enough enough?
I just don't get who is renting this shit.
Me?
Really? Really? Were you like, oh boy, the new Children of the Corn sequel's
out? Well, I wasn't oh boy, but I've seen 6 of them, so what does that tell you?
Fuck. Like, I don't know. Like, I just didn't have any interest in any of them. I guess because I thought the first one kind of sucked.
Well, you know. But the only other 80s one I have written down is more of a, not really a killer kid movie, but more of a kid in the movie who becomes a killer kid and is creepy as fuck. Pet Sematary, another Stephen King one.
Right. We talked about, what's his name?
With Gage, played by Miko Hughes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the movie's basically about an Indian burial ground that brings the dead back to life and how far people will go to bring back their loved ones. And obviously Gage is, I think in the movie, he's only supposed to be like 4 years old. And they bring him back and he has psychotic tendencies.
Right.
And I think because he's so damn young in the movie, that's why it's so fucking messed up.
Right.
Like, he does shit in this movie that you wouldn't want a regular fucking adult to do to people, you know, like cutting the tendons on the back of the ankles and, you know, the across the mouth thing, which I'm not going to spoil for people.
Is he a zombie?
He's kind of a zombie and he runs around with a scalpel, like threatening people.
Right,
and shit.
Right,
It's messed up.
Yeah, I haven't seen those for a long time.
It's messed up.
I remember liking the second one better.
Really?
Yeah, maybe trust, I think I need to watch them again. Yeah.
The best thing about the second one is the fact that Clancy Brown plays the main bad guy, and Clancy Brown's always
maybe
good.
That's what it was.
And it's also got like a really sweet scene where someone gets their head mushed off by a dirt bike wheel
in part two.
In part two,
yeah.
And there's a scene with Clancy Brown like basically gutting fucking rabbits to the song Shitlist by L7. So
see, I'm always a fan of the camp and the ridiculous.
It's super camp.
That might be why I like it better.
But first one's pretty good, but
yeah,
you know, that's all I have from the 80s. So if you want to fill in some gaps here, let's do it.
Yeah, I got a couple of The Pit.
Oh yeah, I didn't bring it up because I haven't seen it in so long that I don't remember anything about it.
He's just a creepy little pervy
kid who spies on girls, and his teddy bear is possessed by a teddy demon bear, or something. Or
he's got these like troglodytes.
Doesn't
in
the
this
teddy bear tell him to dump people in a pit?
I can't remember if it tells him or if he thinks it. I don't know if it's like that voice thing, like
I've heard
Maniac.
It's
or
one of those movies that's like was made in the early 80s. It's kind of having a comeback now.
Yeah,
like people are kind of getting into it and realizing
it's not available. It's out
camp
of print.
Value. Well, yeah. It's Code Red. Of course, it's out of print.
Oh fuck, is it Code Red again?
I think so.
Yeah, I've actually never seen The Pit. I've always wanted to.
I saw it on VHS back in the day.
It's hard to get, yeah. It's tough to get one. So there's The Pit. There's also, again, another one I haven't seen because I love this genre so much.
You love it.
But apparently there's a really great story in a movie called The Offspring from 1987.
I don't remember this either.
Directed by Jeff Burr.
Otherwise known as From a Whisper to a Scream.
Yeah.
Which is where it's available most under that title.
Yeah.
Because it's out on Scream Factory Blu-ray now under that title.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I might have
got a Dollarama score.
I got
of
a
that.
Dollarama.
The MGM DVD.
All right, I can watch this one.
Nice.
But yeah, there's apparently a story about set in the Civil War at some farmhouse or something with some killer kids. I hate talking about movies I haven't seen. It drives me crazy.
I've seen some of them.
I did want to bring up, I know I talked about it a few weeks ago, but Ghost House.
Yeah.
There's that really creepy ghost kid that like
with the clown
puppet that sets off. That's the Umberto Lenzi directed
it's an Umberto Lenzi jam, yo.
Italian haunted house movie.
It's a jam.
Yeah, she was pretty creepy. Firestarter.
Yeah, didn't like it.
Yeah, I'm just breezing.
Marco Lester, we've talked about
this.
We
didn't talk about it in the King episode, or we're not talking about it.
We did talk about it. I have talked about Firestarter, and I thought
we sort of glossed it over.
I don't understand how Marco Lester directed that movie, considering that he did Commando the year after, and he did Class of 1984 before.
Yeah.
So, weird.
And there's one 70s movie I missed called Kathy's Curse.
That's another something weird special.
Yeah, about a creepy kid as well. So I just wanted to mention that one.
Okay.
So going on to, why don't we just sort of go on from like everything else now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do everything
else. Or we could do 90s, I guess. Why don't we do 90s?
I don't have anything for the 90s. I have two movies.
There's a huge one from the 90s.
Is there?
Oh, yeah.
I think I might be missing it then. Why don't you tell me what it is?
It's called The Good Son.
Oh, I have it written down. Fuck yeah, The Good Son. This is like the Bad Seed 1993
exactly,
version.
Exactly, man.
This is Macaulay Culkin trying to put behind his Home Alone cuteness.
Hell yeah. So story directed by Joseph Rubin.
Who did some good stuff.
The Stepfather and
Dreamscape,
yeah,
Sleeping
Pom-Pom
with the
Girls.
Enemy.
Yeah, yeah. He's done a bunch of good movies. So yeah, this is, yeah, basically like the Bad Seed with a boy.
Yeah, it's like Macaulay Culkin being an orphan, taken in by a family.
David Morse, I think, is the dad.
Yeah, and Elijah Wood is the son.
Yeah.
So he becomes quick friends with Elijah Wood, but he's evil. So he gets up to no good. He's got that famous scene. Mr. Highway doesn't like life anymore.
Yeah.
Where they throw the dummy onto the highway and cause that big car pileup.
Yeah, they take a dummy to a highway overpass.
Yeah.
And that's where Elijah starts realizing that this kid that's come into the family is
a little bit fucked up.
Yeah, a little bit fucked up.
So, but the ending is so epic.
I don't remember
the
ending.
I don't want to spoil it for people, but it involves the mother making a choice.
Oh, okay.
And the choice part is so amazingly awesome.
Yeah, I remember enjoying this movie quite a bit.
It's fun.
Think it was a fun, and it had that sort of camp factor to
it. Yeah, it's like Macaulay Culkin, not the most convincing actor in the world when he was a kid. But,
yeah,
you know, it's nice to see him like actually try and act instead of like bumbling or walking around setting up traps for fucking Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern to bumble into.
So yeah, I mean, I think of this, in this subgenre, this has rightfully earned its place as one of the kind of staples.
It's definitely, he's definitely not as good an actor as his brother, Kieran Culkin.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, it's pretty fun.
It's
pretty fun.
Kieran Culkin's in all those like hipster movies you like, right?
Joseph Rubin, he made some fun movies, man. Because before this, he made Sleeping with the Enemy. So,
yeah,
you know, that's Julia Roberts' best jam. I'm going to call everything a jam.
You're
from
calling
now on.
A lot of things jams.
Umberto Lenzi's jam, Nightmare City. Let's. So another one from the 90s I wrote down, which is an obscure one, which I really think is fun, is a movie from 92 called Mikey.
Right, yeah.
And the reason this is important for me is because it stars Brian Bonzel as the title psychopathic kid, who you might remember from Family Ties as being the young son Andy, who they added on later in the series, who annoyed right. the fuck out of you.
Yeah, I remember.
So
him.
He was. It's got.
Didn't
some,
he just? Isn't he gay?
He's in a band now. I don't know if he's gay, but I know he's like he something. He retired from recently. Acting in 1994 to focus on music. So he hasn't really been in much, but he was in like a lot of kids' movies. He was in like Blank Check. He was in like. This movie called Father and Son, which was like him and Bob Saget going into the wilderness camping together to bond and all this shit. He was in bad movies. But Mikey, he has like, he kills people. There's this pretty cool scene involving a bow and arrow, which I liked.
Right.
Fun little movie. I saw it on VHS. I'd really like to see it again.
You like this genre.
But I don't think it's been, I do like this genre.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's been released since VHS.
Okay.
But it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Was the Paperboy also in the 90s?
Paperboy was 94. It's one of those Canadian thrillers that was made by that... there was a company called Image Corporation, who in the 90s, all they did was crank out these like thrillers like the Paperboy and stuff.
Right.
And they were like Canadian tax shelter movies.
Right, right.
And Paperboy was one of them. It was kind of fun.
Right.
Psychotic Paperboy. He wasn't running around going, $2, I want my $2. Although it would make the movie better if it was.
Yeah, I'm no interest in any of these.
I like this genre, dude.
Yeah.
That's all I got from the 90s, though. I don't have a lot more, actually.
Well, the only one I want to mention, and this is just a killer kid in a movie, would be, I guess it's kind of a zombie, though. It's the baby and brain dead, or dead alive, sorry.
That's the best killer kid.
Yeah, it's a pretty great killer kid.
I love that friggin' movie, though. The only two other ones I want to mention from the 2000s, and then we can do your typical filling in the blanks at the end.
I don't have a lot of filling in the blanks this time.
Yeah, this is going to be a pretty good compact episode then.
Yeah.
So the only two I really want to mention that I wrote down, which I think are important to talk about, was a 2008 movie called The Children.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I love it.
It's pretty good.
British movie.
Pretty good. I liked it a lot when I watched it, but I don't really remember it.
This movie is a really slow burn, though.
Yeah.
Because it's about a bunch of families getting together for Christmas holidays and going out on vacation, and suddenly all the kids take ill. And I found the kids to be really fucking annoying at first, because all they did was cry and vomit and everything.
Yeah.
And but the parents were like... The thing is, this movie is realistic in the sense of killer kids, in the sense that, like, the parents were kind of, like, concerned about the kids were acting normal, but then it's, like, this virus that makes them start murdering their parents, and there's some really cool stuff in this movie,
yeah.
Like, director Thomas Shankland hasn't really done anything since.
No.
And, you know, once the slow part comes and it kicks in, I found it to be kind of disturbing.
Like that sled scene.
Like the sled scene where they like set it up so that it looks like an accident, but it's not.
Yeah.
And there's that scene where they're like trying to claw through the door to get at the one mother.
Yeah.
And they like use they change their like demeanors to try and convince her to come out by acting all innocent and crying
that.
That really got under my skin.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a really well done killer kid movie because it's not like fantastical like Children of the Corn or anything. It's realistic because... In a lot of these killer kid movies, you don't have scenes of the adults, like, questioning what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Whereas in The Children, like, what the fuck's going on with our kids? Like, what's the matter? What's going on here? Like, there's a lot of questioning that happens in that movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it watchable, because people should be asking questions when their kids suddenly go apeshit and want to murder you.
Yeah, and actually that brings up a good point, because I find with a lot of these movies, like having there's a kid in my life,
yeah,
and I can't even imagine what it would be like if he went mental, right?
Right.
But you're right. Like a lot of the time, it's just crazy kids running around, and like no one's really mentioning it. Yeah. No one's talking about it. And, yeah, I do remember this one.
Whereas in the children, they're all saying to each other, "What's going on with our children? What can we do?" Like, there's something wrong. What can we do to help them so they don't do this? And it's just a weird balance they found in that movie, I thought.
Yeah.
Because it has all the horror elements that you want at the end, because it gets pretty intense.
Yeah.
But there's that slow buildup, which I actually kind of a little bit dull, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it was realistically portrayed.
Yeah.
The buildup to it. And I think that's what makes that movie worth mentioning.
Yeah. Like I said, the weird thing about this one is just I really liked it when I watched it. But I can't tell you anything about it.
Yeah.
And another one that's always weird.
And another one that approaches the topic really realistically, I found. And I want to mention this, even though it's not your standard horror movie type killer kids movie. And the focus is generally on the adult character, which makes it a twist to what we're talking about, is a 2011 movie called We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Right.
Which is based on a Lionel Shriver book, which I really love. Like, this is a great book. So
isn't that about a teen, though?
It's kind of... The main focus at the end is about a teen and doing kind of parallels to Columbine and stuff like that.
Right.
But they knew this kid was evil from being a toddler, basically.
Oh, okay.
So the buildup of it is Tilda Swinton plays the mother of Kevin. And she knows early on that there's something wrong with her child. She knows her child has these inklings to be a sociopath, to be very, like, you know, what's the word I'm thinking of when you don't have feelings about other people? There's a term for it. Not narcissistic particularly, but they just don't care about other people and their well-being.
Right.
So she sees this in the kid when he's really young, but nobody tends to believe her. So the book in the movie is about her dealing with the aftermath of it coming out that Kevin is actually a sociopath and has done terrible things.
Right.
So that's what makes it a very intriguing premise, because it's more of a drama than it is a horror movie, right, and anything like that. And the focus is more on Tilda Swinton's character and the impact of that. Like, you know, she'll be trying to live a regular life, and because of what her son's done, she'll get basically slapped by other mothers on the street when she's trying to buy groceries. And
right.
It's, you know, it's a very interesting look at the social impact of having a child who has become psychotic and has done terrible things. And Ezra Miller plays Kevin as a teenager in it, and he's just got this controlled menace through the whole movie, and he's very, very, like, very menacing. Like, you're watching it, you're going, I would never want to cross paths with this kid. There's something wrong with this kid.
Misanthrope.
Yeah, I guess that's not the word I'm thinking of. There is another term, but okay. I'm not worried about it right now.
Yeah.
I think I got across what I mean.
It's been stuck in my head.
I knew somebody, I actually had a friend who had this problem where they just didn't care about other people's feelings, and they had mental,
right,
you know, they had mental disabilities, and I just can't think of the term right now.
Yeah.
But, Ezra Miller is very controlled in this movie. Tilda Swinton is very good. She's generally good in everything.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a different take on killer kids, because it's more looking at the social impact of it. It's more bringing it into the realism of Columbine and, you know, things like that. And I thought that's why it's worth mentioning.
Nice.
I mean, even though he is a teenager, the main of the focus is on a teenager, and that's not kind of what we're going for. There are earlier scenes when he's like 8 and younger where she knows there's something wrong.
Right.
And I love the book. I highly recommend the book. And the movie is actually really great, too.
Cool.
So that's all I got written down. Let's fill in some blanks and then let's call her a day.
Do find there's been a lot of... This subgenre has been kind of making a bit of a comeback lately.
Right.
There's been quite a few movies with evil children.
Yeah.
So one of my favorites, and this one's not really about evil children. It's, again, we're going back to It's Alive territory, sort of.
Right.
It's Paul Sollett's Grace from 2009.
Which I love Paul Sollett as a filmmaker. I remember his original short, Means to an End, that he made, where it's about two horror fans trying to make a horror movie, but making it like kind of snuffy. It was a short that was included on one of those Fangoria Blood Drive compilations. Yeah, yeah. And Paul actually sent it to me back in the day.
Right.
To check out, and I really loved it. And I haven't had a chance to see Grace yet, but I hear nothing but good things about
it. Yeah, it's really, really good. So this is...
It's very disturbing too, right?
Yeah, it's a dark, dark movie.
Yeah.
So Jordan Ladd, you probably know her from maybe Cabin Fever or Club Dread. She stars as this woman who basically has to give stillbirth to a baby.
Yeah.
And, but then the baby...
isn't a stillbirth?
Isn't dead.
Yeah.
But it won't drink breast milk. It will only drink blood.
Yeah, I remember the poster artwork's like a baby bottle filled with blood with flies around the nipple of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really strong image for the poster because it tells you exactly what you're getting.
Yeah.
And I bought the movie for like a buck on DVD. And I don't know why I keep putting off checking it out.
It's good. It's a simple movie. There's not a lot of locations. It's not a lot of characters. Yeah. But
I've heard it's pretty psychologically grueling.
Yeah, it's a tough watch.
Yeah, and he just directed a movie called Dark Summer.
Yeah.
Which I've heard isn't the greatest, but I am curious about it because I think he's an interesting filmmaker.
Yeah.
And he was involved in that Tales of Halloween that just came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out Grace. That's a really good more recent kid movie. Just because it's my name, there's Joshua from 2007.
With Sam Rockwell. I haven't seen this one either.
I haven't seen it either. But again, it's got a killer kid in it. And Vera Farmiga was also in one called Orphan.
I was just about to bring that up.
2009.
Yeah. I forgot to write that down, even though I originally intended to. I love Orphan.
Yeah, so Orphan sort of looks like the good son with a girl.
Kind of is, but there's a really, really awesome twist at the end, which takes it to a whole new territory and a whole new level.
Nice.
And I actually was surprised by that movie because it's directed by Jamie Collette Sarah.
Yeah.
And the last movie I had seen of his that he did was the House of Wax remake, which I was very indifferent towards.
I liked it, yeah.
So I actually thought he did a really good job. It's another movie that focuses more on characters.
Yeah.
And the girl who played the main orphan in it, I can't think of her name right now.
Yeah, I didn't write it down.
She was really good.
Yeah.
Really good. Like one of the best killer kid performances in recent memory.
Yeah, and like just has that sort of evil.
Well, because she's got that Russian European look to her because she's supposed to be a Russian orphan. And the reason she gets adopted is because she's very artistic and everything. So they all think they're getting like this progeny. But she's got issues.
Yeah.
No, and those issues that come out in that twist, fucking awesome.
Yeah, no, I want to check that
out. Highly recommend Orphan, for sure.
Check that out. And a great cast. I mean, Vera Farmiga and Peter Sarsgaard, both awesome actors. And like I said, Joshua has Vera Farmiga again.
Yeah, and she's got a thing for killer kids because she's also in Bates Motel. So.
Yeah, and Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I love Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. Quickly flipping through, another one from 2012 called Sick Boy. This is a babysitter movie, but she's babysitting a like evil child.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. And there's another one,
and Debbie Rochon's in that. And
there's another recent one that we just both, I think you bought it and I have it at home too, called Cub.
Yeah,
that's, I believe it looks like a killer kid movie to me from the cover.
Yeah, I didn't buy it. I just
You were considering buying it.
I've considered it. The price has gone up now, so it's over.
It's over. But that looks like a kind of a taking it into a new territory of like organic, like forest.
I can't even comment. I don't know anything about it. It seems weird. Yeah, yeah.
So you might want to look into that one.
Yeah. There's another one called Wicked Little Things from 2006.
Yeah, I have that at home. I haven't watched
it. J.S. Cardone. This is about a bunch of like kids that were forced into mining. And I guess there was like a mine collapse. Yeah. And now they've come back to like wreak their revenge.
Yeah, I bought that one. It was part of that 8 Films to Die For series that came out. And I just haven't got around to watching it. J.S. Cardone's kind of an interesting dude because he hasn't done good stuff.
No,
because
it always sounds like it's going to be good.
Yeah, like he did the Stepfather remakes and he did like The Forsaken.
Yeah.
He worked with Charlie Band and did Shadow Zone. And
yeah.
he's weird. His career path is weird.
Yeah.
But I've actually heard good things about Wicked Little Things.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's got Taylor Compton Scout in it.
Scout Taylor Compton,
whatever her fucking name is. She ruined
Chloe Grace Moretz. She's in as well.
She was terrible in the Halloween movies, dude, and Rob Zombie's.
The chick from Kick-Ass, she's in it.
Yeah, Carrie remake.
Another one called Wakewood from 2010.
Yeah.
British one from Hammer Films, starring Eva Birthwistle.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, she was also in Eva Birthwistle. She was in something else we just talked about. I think she was in The Children, actually.
Oh, okay.
Another one called Home Movie from 2009.
Yeah.
Starring Adrian Pastar. And this is like
there's a name from the past.
Pastar. But yeah, it looked kind of found footagey, but yeah, it looks like, yeah, this again, really evil little children. Citadel.
Citadel looks good.
Yeah, from 2012. I talked about Sick Boy. I think Let the Right One In. I don't know if she's really a killer
kid.
She's
a vampire, so I didn't write it down simply because of the fact she was a vampire.
Yeah, fair enough.
Let the Right One In, though, it's great.
And then there's that story in Trick or Treat. Not my favorite movie.
Sam?
There's that story with the killer kids in that one, too.
You know what? I know you don't like Trick or Treat, but I fucking love it. I can't wait for Krampus.
Yeah, Krampus looks really good. I saw the trailer for that.
So it's interesting because we came into this and, you know, I'm a big fan of this subgenre.
Yeah.
And you're not.
I have two honorable mentions.
Okay.
There's a really great X-Files episode called Eve with these two killer twin kids. That's a really good one. And also...
what season's that from?
I think it's from season one.
Okay.
And there's also a really great music video featuring killer kids.
Yeah,
called Y Control.
That's a great video.
Highly recommend. That's one of my favorite videos of all time. Yeah.
So... Yeah. Disturbing.
Love it.
Great video. But it's interesting, though, like I was saying, I'm a fan of this subgenre. You're not.
Nope.
But we still managed to reach a middle ground, and I think we still are walking away, like you said, with a handful of titles that we really want to check out now.
Yeah, I'll definitely check out Devil Times 5 and Orphan.
Yeah, so. And I want to watch Wicked Little Things now, because I've been putting it off. I definitely want to watch Grace now.
Yeah, Grace is so good.
Hopefully you guys are getting... some titles to write down here. If we're missing any, you know, you can tell us about it. But to connect with us, just go to www.thevideograveyard.com/GBWpodcast. So that's it for now. And until next time, I am Chris, and with me is Josh. And
we
will
night.
See you later.
Yeah.
And beware if you have children. They might be coming at you with a knife. You never know. Thanks.
Bye.
Sleep tight.